about where the images are. So in this particular case, we can quickly locate two images. Okay, let's say this is the object right here, represented by that little point. Then I can measure that distance, and I can come down here, and I can say that there's an image, let's say image one, sitting right behind the mirror. Where's another image? There's an image over on this side. So again, we just think of drawing a perpendicular. Then I have to measure the distance, whatever this is, somewhere around 21 and a half. So there's image two. Now the claim is that it's more than two images. So how do I get other images? Why are there other more than images? Right. Basically, you have to follow their light rays, right? So how do I get these light rays? I bounce it off, come up, bounce this off, come up, trace that back, right? Essentially, this picture, this image is that picture flipped over on its side. Okay, so the question is, how do other images form?
Reflection of a reflection.
Reflection of a reflection. That sounds right. So what happens if I follow one of the light rays that comes off in this direction? Where does that light ray go? Well, let's see, again, we're thinking about the normal to the surface. There's the angle of incidence. The angle of incidence should be equal to the angle of reflection. Okay, sitting there. I brought my protractor. I couldn't find the compass. So if I look at this, this is actually pretty difficult, but they're so big. So this is about, 36 or 37 degrees. Somewhere off there. Let's see if that helps any. Again, I need a sharp pencil, a straight edge to do this right. And there's a light ray. It bounces off one mirror and it hits the other mirror. So we draw a perpendicular. And voila. Okay, so what else can we do? That's not enough to determine where the image is it? So what do we do now? Try another one. So that one goes kind of like this. I don't know. Now, if I had some time, I could be a little more careful on my drawing. Okay. Measure the angles. Might be a little off. My vertical might be a little off too. And then I need another ray. So you can imagine drawing several of these things and seeing what happens. All right? If I draw a third one, chances are they won't intersect because I wasn't careful. So two should be sufficient to get the idea. What I have to do is if I look into that mirror, I can see the reflection of the object from here. So let's see, how do I see that? Well, I just have to extend these back and see what I get. All right, so the idea is I form a third image. In general, like I said, these aren't perfect. Can I get any other images? No? Yes? No? Maybe? All right, so the idea is light comes off, it bounces off the first mirror, hits the second mirror. Is it possible the light could go from the first, bounce off the second mirror and hit the first mirror? So could I have a light ray that comes down here and hit this one and it bounces and hits that one and it goes off? The answer is yes. So there's actually another image I could do. Can I get multiple reflections? Can I get a reflection of a reflection of a reflection? Well, I could if I actually made that angle smaller. Okay, so this angle is going to produce somewhere around here, say an I4. When I have two mirrors. Now, if I were a little more careful in my drawing, it would turn out that these two really should be along a line. Okay. These two will come together. This is exactly 90, and I draw my images. So for 90 degrees, you actually get three. You can get three images. Okay. If I change that angle a little, these will split apart, and then I will see the four images. And then as we saw in the little web page, the applet, whatever, right, we saw that if we bring them really close together, we can get these things bouncing off each other and producing several images. Another version is what happens when I have mirrors that are not at an angle to each other, in that sense, but they're parallel to each other. So let's say I have two mirrors, and you've probably experienced this. Well, it doesn't take too much. All you have to do is have a little mirror and put a mirror behind it, okay, and do something to that effect. So I have two mirrors sitting here. I put an object sitting there, and then the question is, how many images are there? Parallel mirrors. Okay, well, let's think about this. Measure this, okay, let's see, right now that's 7 units, this distance is about 16 units, they're actually centimeters, okay, so now I take a look at these, and we ask, where is there an image? Well, you should immediately be able to tell me where the image is on that side. It's what?
7.
So there's an image here of 7 centimeters. What about over here?
16.
Okay, we have one that's 16. So that's the second image. Is that it?
Will there be another one
at 23? Will there be one at
23?
Why?
It's coming up the other side.
Okay, so there will be another one. Just where it is, we'll see. All right, so why would there be another one? Because what I could do, for example, is imagine that this image is being reflected in that mirror. Right? The reflection of a reflection, the thing that was discussed back here. So a reflection of a reflection basically is the equivalent of saying, get rid of the second mirror, pretend that's real, and what is the image of this image? It's how far?
30.
Seven plus 7 plus 16 is 30. So we're going to have an image over here where that's 30. What about a reflection of this image? I2. There's going to be an image over there. Ignore this mirror. Treat this as an object, right? Of distance, what, 39. So now way out here somewhere, there's another one at 39 centimeters. Am I done? No, because now I can say the image of the image of the image. So now this guy, I can take 39 plus, what is that, 23, and I get an image over here, and then I can take this guy and that get a reflection of that down there. So I get how many images?
18.
That number. And we can locate some over here. Okay, so that's what happens when you have two parallel mirrors. That's when you see this infinite regression. Okay. You know, like Spaceballs. Okay. All right, so that's plane mirrors. What I'd like to do is now move on to more fun mirrors, spherical mirrors. We're going to do some curved mirrors and see what we can see with curved mirrors. So the idea of a curved mirror is you can imagine taking a sphere, okay, a metallic sphere of some kind, and cutting it. Okay, of course this is a sphere, and if I do that, I'll get a piece that looks like this, and it'll have sort of an inside. Okay, so now I've got this spherical cap, and then I can coat it so that either side is reflective. Or it could be a piece of metal. It could be as simple as a soup spoon. Right? Got a nice shiny soup spoon. Okay. And you could look at your reflection on this side or on that side. Okay, so this produces two types of spherical mirrors. I'm not going to draw that every time I need to think about spherical mirrors. Okay. So what I'm going to do is just draw this like that. If I silver the back of it so that the inside is where it's reflective. Okay, then I get a mirror that looks like that. So I'll pass a couple of these around. There are two mirrors on here. One side is like that, where it's bent in. It's caved in. And since it's caved in, this is called a concave mirror. If I were to make the reflective side the other side, then I would draw something like this. I would indicate the back is over here, in which case I would have light that bounces off on that side. This one's called a convex mirror. And what we're interested in with these mirrors, and that's going to be on the back side, so we'll be able to determine which when we get done. So I have concave and convex mirrors, and when you look in these mirrors, what you're interested in is where is the image? Okay, same thing we did with plane waves, except now they're spherical mirrors. Okay? All right, so let me start off with a concave mirror. As I said, this is really part of a circle. Okay, so when I think about these mirrors, let's see what the problem with this is. I'm left-handed. So there's a piece of mirror. My center. So I'm just going to think about this concave mirror that's got a backing on it. I have light coming in from the left. Normally when I do this, I have light coming in from the left when I do it. Okay, I could just as easily have light coming from the other direction. Right. Okay, this is the center. And I'm going to draw a line through the center. Often I'll put a C to designate that that's the center. This is called the principal axis. This point of intersection is the vertex. And of course, we're interested in how light rays strike this. We'll also notice that since that's a piece of a circle, which is really a piece of a sphere, right? But I'm not going to draw the entire sphere. So the radius of this mirror is given by R. Well, that's the first letter that's going to be associated with R equals the radius. Now, as I have light rays coming in, they're going to come in and they're going to hit the mirror. So we could imagine a light ray that's coming in. It hits that mirror, and then it's going to And that's going to do what? If I have an object sitting here, what's it going to do? What does it do? Comes in and reflects. Now, to determine where this thing reflects, what I have to do is look at this little chunk here that's relatively flat. And then I construct the normal, and then I use angle of incidence as angle of reflection. Okay? But we know something about circles. Okay? Where is the normal for a circle?
Perpendicular.
Well, it's perpendicular. What lines are perpendicular to the boundary of a circle?
Radius.
Radius. What did I just draw?
Radius.
A radius. So this is, right, so if I actually have any light that's going from C to the mirror, it's going to bounce back through C. Okay? Any light that bounces with an angle of incidence equal to zero, because since this is normal, if I'm coming down straight down the normal, I'm going to go straight back up to normal. Okay? Ray to come in. So I could have another light ray come in. I could have a light ray that comes in, say, from here. Then that would come up. I have an angle, and then it would bend down, and then it would come down through here, right? So we know where the normal is to this. And then the question is, what can we say about other rays that are coming in? Okay, another type of ray, a really easy type of ray that can come in, is one that's coming in parallel to the axis. So since I already have the normal here, I'm going to have something roughly come parallel into the point that I've already drawn. Roughly. Right, comes in here. Angle of incidence is equal to angle of reflection. Okay, so this is approximately correct. So this is going to come in like this, and it's going to bounce out. So a light ray that comes in parallel would look something like that. Of course, that's not the only parallel ray. I could have another ray coming in parallel. And then I can construct a normal. And then I have angle of incidence as angle of reflection. And then I see where that goes. And I can keep doing this. I could have them come down here, right? I don't have to always stay above the axis. I could have this one come in. Parallel ray comes in. It reflects. And it goes off. Okay, so parallel rays all come in and they bounce off, and they do not go through a single point. Though I cheated, I drew them sort of like they did. If the rays are too far away from the center axis, they'll be off a little. Okay, that's called spherical aberration. We cover spherical mirrors in these classes all the time. They're not the best mirrors to use. What you really want to have is a parabolic mirror. A parabolic mirror is ideal. Then they really do focus them here. So what we have to do is we have to assume that these light rays are actually close to the axis, and then this holds up pretty good. Okay. So what we have to do is assume that we have para-axial. Right, so most of our rays are going to be coming in at small angles, not very large angles here. The larger this angle is, okay, the further from this point. Okay. Now when you go into the lab and start doing these experiments, you haven't done any lenses yet?
Yeah.
You did the bench, and so did you focus an image from outside the window?
Yeah.
That was exciting, wasn't it? That's what you're doing here, so taking light from far away, and light from real far away comes in and focuses at a point. And in fact, if I come over here and put a little piece of paper, I can get an image of something that's far away. That point there we'll call F. And F is the focal point. Which is an important point for us to know as we progress. The distance, well, the distance from C to the vertex is what? R. The distance from big F to the vertex is little f. This is the focal length. The distance from the vertex to where the focal point is, so we know where that is. And for spherical mirrors now, the relationship between these two is fairly simple. F is equal to R over 2. So if I tell you what the radius is, I know what F is. And we should note that this, everything I'm talking about for the most part right now is for concave mirrors. All right, so that takes care of those. If I want a convex mirror, as we'll see later, we are going to stipulate that the focal length is negative. So so that things work out. So when I have a curved mirror in that direction, the type of picture you have is the following. There's the backing. If I have light rays coming straight in, then they are going to bounce so that the angle of incidence is equal to angle of reflection. And you notice that if I get a bunch of these coming in, I draw my perpendicular. Of course, this perpendicular goes back here to C, the center of that. And this is going to come in and bounce off. So you see these light rays are going to hit that mirror, and they're going to spread. They're going to diverge. Whereas when they hit this here, they converge. Okay. And in fact, if I trace these backwards, they intersect at a point that's halfway between C and that. And that is the focal point for a convex mirror. So that's one of the differences between this drawing for concave and that drawing for convex. Since it's behind the mirror, we're going to take that to be negative. So light rays don't get behind the mirror. So the region where things don't get to, you know, things, our variables take on negative values. If I'm on this side, our variables take positive values. Same thing here. Of course, as far as you can tell, everything over here is positive so far. Okay? But we'll see that that's not always going to be the case. Okay, so that gives you some ideas as how some of these mirrors behave. I'm going to pass these around so that maybe you can tell the difference. Put one on each side. Okay, some of you may have curved mirrors at home, right, that you can go home and play with them during the break, a week from now. Okay. Now, as you look in these mirrors, you see images of yourself, right, of things like yourself. Okay, the question is, where is the image in the mirror? We established where the images were for playing mirrors, right? We can tell you exactly where that image is. Can we do the same thing for spherical mirrors? So image formation. There are two ways to do this. One is to draw pictures, okay, and that's what's called ray diagrams, which I expect to see in your homework when you start doing chapter 25 homework. Okay. The other method is analytically. Okay, where we'll have a nice equation called the mirror equation, which we can actually plug some numbers in and get the location of the image and the type of image out. So that's what I want to do first. I'm going to concentrate mostly on concave. Start. And then we'll go to convex. So I'm going to start with a concave mirror, and I'm going to develop what I need by setting up an example. So let's say that I have a mirror whose radius of curvature, okay, so radius of curvature is 20 centimeters. Now let's say I put an object in front of the mirror. Okay. Let's say I have an object distance at 30 centimeters. All right, the O for object distance, just like we did for plane mirrors. Okay, what I'd like to do is say something about the image. Okay. So, let me start this. Now, 30 centimeters is only that much. I'm going to double my, I'm going to rescale this as I draw it. But first I need an axis. Okay. Vertex is right here. Here's my C. And then I'm going to put an object over here, okay, and then some of what I'm doing may violate a little bit my idea that I have to have small enough objects for paraxial rays, but the idea is I'm going to put an image here. Now normally when I put images up, I'll draw an image with an arrow, use an arrow for an image. This image has a height, so I'm going to specify the height, I mean the object has a height of 7.5 centimeters. Okay, I'm going to be a little different if it were taller or shorter or whatever. Okay, now there are three kinds of rays that I can draw. Remember, coming off of the top of this arrow, there's an infinite number of rays. At the bottom of the arrow, there's an infinite number of rays. So technically, I really should do rays for both the bottom and the top so I can locate the bottom and the top of the image. Okay? But by putting this on the axis, it turns out that my image will also have the bottom of its arrow, the image of the arrow, on the axis. That way, it's sufficient for me just to do what I need to do with one point and not get you too confused by doing both points. Okay, but keep in mind, okay, that my image, the point that I'm going to draw for the bottom of that arrow is really something you get if you were to do the same diagram for this. As long as this is on the axis, the image will have its bottom on the axis. So I'm just going to focus on where the top ends up, where the point. Okay, so what can I do here? Well, I have to think about it. There's an infinite number of rays that are coming off of here. I'm only going to pick a couple of rays. Okay, so the first ray that I would like to pick is a ray that's coming parallel to the axis. Why would that be of interest? Because I know any ray that's coming through here is going to go through the focal point. Where's the focal point? It over here?
Yeah.
Here? No. Halfway between C and the vertex. Where is that? That's right there. So there's my focal point. I can now draw a light ray. And let me keep a list of the types of rays that I'm doing. Okay? So the idea here, and I'm going to do this shorthand, parallel rays go through F. You need to know this. If you take a look at the next test, you'll see there'll be ray diagrams that you'll have to do. So now I need to come up parallel. Let's see if I can get this approximately parallel anyway. Now here comes a ray, parallel. I were to draw the normal goes through C, so this angle would have to be D. That angle of incidence would be the angle of reflection. This would come off in that direction. Okay, so there's one light ray of many. Any other light rays I might be able to do quickly? Well, it turns out there is a second one. Well, it's actually, there's two more I'm going to do. That if I go through C, it comes back out through C. Remember what I said back here. If this were where the light ray were coming, it would go up with zero incident angle, and it would come back with zero reflected angle. It just goes along the normal. So in this case, if I have one of these light rays and it just happens to be going, well, a good thing there's part of the mirror down there to hit. Now, if my mirror really were right here, it's not going to change what's going on. These are just representative rays. There's a whole bunch of other rays here that are going to contribute to forming the image. All right, so I have a light ray that comes down here, and it hits, and but that's the normal. So it's like coming onto a plane mirror, straight down, it's going to go straight back up. So this is going to go back that way. And now the question is, are there any other rays? Well, there aren't too many other points on here, are there, that I can refer to? Well, the third one is, what happens if I have a light ray that goes through F? Well, we could imagine turning, right, running this film backwards. What if I had this light going this way instead? Which way is it going to go? That angle of reflection becomes an angle of incidence now. That's equal to the angle, right? It's just going to go back out parallel. Right? So in this case, if the light ray goes through F, then it comes out parallel. So let's see what that does. Okay, it goes through F. Here comes the light ray. And it's going to go out parallel. Whereas this is where my drawing may become sloppy. As you can see, I have spherical aberration. Or that is chalk aberration. Okay. Ideally, of course, these intersect at a point. So if I'm careful, I have a sharp pencil, straight edge. Okay, these will intersect right there. And that is the image of the tip of the arrow. So to complete this, I'll draw. So this is the object. There's the image. And so these three rays, out of all the rays that are coming off the tip, will form an image of the tip of the arrow right there. If I come down and pick this point, I can do the same construction and find that point, etc. Okay? So the next types of things that you should know when you're dealing with these spherical mirrors is, how do I describe the image? Okay, so how would I describe this image? It's upside down. You agree? Or inverted. No. A little more nerdy. All right, so my image is inverted. What else did we talk about? We talked about virtual and real. What do you think? Is this virtual or real?
It's real.
Why? Because this is formed by real light rays. So this image is real. You could actually come down here, I could put a little mirror here, I could reflect that light, capture it somewhere else. Which is a basic principle of a reflector telescope. Okay, I could send that somewhere to an eyepiece. Okay, what other kinds of things can I say about this? Well, I can locate it right there. Well, actually, I can measure this. Let's see, where is it? This is at 30 centimeters, but that's a factor of 2 because I scaled it, so it's actually at 15. So DI is 15 centimeters. What about its height? That's 8, divide that by 2, that's 4 centimeters. So I can talk about the height that object is, I mean the image is. This object had a height. Height O is a height object, not height, initial height, of 7.5. So what does that tell you? It's smaller. So it's upside down, it's real, it's smaller. Those are the three types of things you want to know about the image. Qualitatively, quantitatively, you want to know where is it and how big is it. Now when I describe how big things are, often I'll talk about the magnification. The other thing we should note is that it's, since it's inverted, that means if that's positive up, this must be negative down. So really think about this along the y-axis. It can have a positive or negative value depending upon whether it's pointing up or pointing down. Magnification you get by asking, what's the ratio of these two things? Since it's smaller, you want a magnification that's less than 1, right? So what you really want to do is look at the height of the image over the height of the object. So the magnification is the height of the image over the height of the object. Since the image height has a negative, right, it's just a matter here now of whether we want to attach a negative sign to the magnification, okay, or to leave that alone. So if I take the height of the image over h0, that would come with a minus, which would indicate, right, that it's been flipped. So what is the height of the image? Minus 4 centimeters divided by, what was it originally, 7.5, so that's, I guess, a little bigger than a half. So these are some of the things that go into describing the image. All right, so now how do I do this analytically? Well, we need what's called the mirror equation. So what I'll do is think about some objects. That'll be a little sketchy. Let's say I have some objects sitting at some distance from the mirror. And we know that there's an image that's formed. Here's the height of the object. There's the height of the image. And if I follow a ray, that goes actually to the center. All rays somehow are going to end up going through the image at some point. So you have a ray that comes off in that direction. The angle of incidence is equal to the angle of reflection. So that angle is equal to this angle. This angle is equal to that angle. 90 degrees both of those are 90, so these are similar triangles. Okay. The full distance from the vertex to the object is DO. The base of this triangle is DI. And so since we have similar triangles, then we know ratios of certain sides are equal. So from this, we get that DO over DI is HO over HI. Now there's one little problem here. Remember, HI is not really this distance, it's the negative of the distance. So I have to put a little minus sign in there to make sure, right? Otherwise I'd have a positive here and a negative here. Alright, that's a relationship between these guys. And of course, HO over HI is related to magnification. I just had a clip. That's one relationship. Now I can get another relationship, okay, in here if I actually look at a line that goes through the focal point. So if I draw another diagram, same object, roughly, but I'm going to follow, let's see if I do this right, I'm sort of reproducing parts of that. So let's say that's F. Then I can follow the light ray that went through F. And that light ray bounces out parallel. Let's see, did I do that the way I wanted to do it? I guess. Well, let me think about it. Oh. Okay. Well, since this goes out parallel, this height here again is HI. There's HO. I mean, it's really minus HI, right, as I explained with the other case. If I look at the triangle at this side and I look at the triangle over here, these have common angles. Okay, and I have to make a little approximation here. If I have paraxial rays, then this length, that height, is approximately equal to that curve. So this point, this little gap here, we're going to neglect. Right, so this is an approximation. So I really want to look at these two similar triangles. They have the same angles. Okay, so we can look at ratios of sides. Well, what sides do I know? I know HO, I know HI. This length here is what? Or what's 1/2 R? No. Focal length. Alright? The distance the focal point is from the vertex is the focal length. I know that distance. Well, how do I know that distance? Because I know the full distance all the way over is the object distance. So if I know that's the object distance, then I know the base of the big triangle is just the object distance minus F. Of course, the book has a much cleaner rendition of this diagram. Okay, so what do I get out of this? I look at ratios of things. Let's see, DO minus F, the base of the big triangle, over the base of the little triangle, must be equal to the ratio of the height of the big triangle over the height, which I remember is minus HI, of the little triangle. Okay, that's enough to get to where I want to be. Because if I compare these two equations, we see they both have HO over minus HI. I can get rid of the heights, and I can get an equation that only involves F, DO, and DI. So if I know where the object is and I know what the focal length is, I can find the image distance. That's what that's telling me. So set these two equal. I'm almost where I need to be. So this implies eliminating the h's, then dO over dI is equal to dO minus F over F. All right, so a little algebra here. dO over F is, well, dO over F. F over F is 1. And now if I divide, ignore the middle. If I divide this by dO, I get 1 over dI. If I divide this by dO, I get 1 over F. And if I divide that by dO, I get 1 over dO. Rearranging, I can solve this for 1 over F. And this is my last step. And I get 1 over the object distance plus 1 over the image distance is 1 over the focal length. Guess what? I'm done deriving. That's the key equation. This is the most important equation in this chapter. All right, this is called the mirror equation. Okay, the second most important equation really results, okay, from looking at these, because from these equations I have the ratio of the distances is equal to the ratio of the heights. So essentially the image height over the object height is equal to minus, okay, the image distance over the object distance. So if I take a look at these, right, those are the key things that I'm going to need in anything I'm doing. Because what happens? The first equation will tell me where the image is, and the second equation is going to tell me how big it is. And that's really all I need to know as I go through this. All right, so let's go back to the example that I was doing before. I told you we had a spherical mirror of radius 20 centimeters and an object distance of 30 centimeters, and we had the object height of 7.5 centimeters. So the types of things that you would be asked are things like, where is the image? Or how big is the image? So let's come back and see. Okay, let's apply this. So let's, first thing I need to do is write down what F is. What is F? R over 2. Which is 10 centimeters. Okay, so now I have 1 over the object distance plus 1 over the image distance is 1 over F. Okay. But instead of me right in the corner here, I'm going to have to scoot down here.
So 1 over the object distance plus 1 over the image distance is 1 over F. 1 over 30 plus 1 over d sub I is equal to 1 over, what was that, 10? Is that right? So I just solved. Let's see. 1 over di is equal to 1 tenth minus 1 over 30. 1 tenth is 3 thirtieths, right? So 3 over 30 minus 1 over 30 is 2 over 30. So d sub I is 30 over 2, which is 15 centimeters. Okay, what did I get? Okay, that worked. Got one right. Okay. All right, so let's see. What about the height? How do I get the height of the image? Well, I have to come over here. I can get the height of the image if I solve this. It's basically this, the ratio of the image and object distances times the actual height of the object. So the image height is minus di over do times the object height. Di is what? 15? Here's where the distance would have put it here.
Oh, okay.
That was too small. I wanted it a little bigger. Yeah, so that's why I divided things by 2 when I got them, because my scale for everything was by a factor of 2. All right. So for convex mirrors, one thing you have to realize is for convex mirrors, f is negative. So if you have a radius of curvature of 20, in this case, f would be negative 10. And you put the negative 10 in here, and that affects how you do the computation. Okay. How do you do ray diagrams? All right, for these. Well, let's look at this. All right, so let's see. Let's say that C is going to be the focal point. There's my mirror. And then I need an object. Okay. So the object distance, again, is the distance the object is from the mirror, and we measure that to the vertex. Okay? The focal length behind the mirror now, so it's negative. Okay? And the idea here is, how do I draw my rays? The rays are going to be a little different, but they're still going to follow those three rules. If I have a parallel ray, it goes through F. So let me come up. Draw a parallel ray. You can imagine, okay, that a little piece of the flat part of the mirror is at this angle. The perpendicular to that is like that. That's going to go through C. So this is going to come in. There's an angle of incidence. It's going to reflect. And my claim is that it will reflect so that it lies on a line that goes through this intersection point and F. So it doesn't actually go through F itself, but it goes on a line that connects F to the point of incidence. So you see, that's the kind of picture you get. Second one, if I'm going towards C, I'll bounce away from C. So same kind of deal.
I look at the line that connects the tip of the arrow down here, or the point of incidence. It goes down to C. Mirror's in the way. So it's going to bounce off along the same line, because that is the zero incidence line. That's the normal for the surface. So that's going to go off in this direction. All right, so coming down towards C, it bounces away. If I'm going towards F, and then it hits the mirror, it's going to bounce off the mirror parallel to the principal axis.
I'll do this.
There's a line. I have a light ray that's going and it's headed toward F, and then the mirror it bounces off the mirror. It's going to come off parallel. So here we come in that direction. Then I'm going to bounce off. Okay? So these get a little tricky if you practice, especially on this kind. All right, do we get an idea where the image is? I'm looking at this. All right, you're looking in the mirror, or in one of these mirrors I'm passing around, right? And these rays are bouncing away, just like with the plane mirror. So we take the rays and we extend them backwards. Extend that one backwards. We extend this one backwards. And we extend that one backwards. And these are off a little bit. Somewhere around, right there. Okay? So there's my image. That's the tip of the arrow. Draw perpendicular. That gives me the full arrow. And how would you describe this image?
Virtual.
Virtual.
Smaller.
Smaller? Yeah, definitely smaller.
That's right.
And it's upright. Okay. There's the image distance. The image distance is going to be less than zero because it's behind the mirror. Just like we have for plane mirrors. Okay, and of course the height is given by that. So my magnification is going to be positive because it's upright. Of course, it'll be less than one because it's smaller. Okay, so that's the type of picture you get. What we could do is come through and do a similar problem like I did before. I could put the same object distance at 30. I could put R at 20, so F is negative 10, so that would change that to a negative 10. So I'd get negative 1/10 minus 1/30, that would change this number. It would also be negative, and you can solve for D. So you can apply the mirror equation directly to this for a similar example, and you can locate the image, and you get the same kinds of numbers that would predict this behavior. Now what you want to do is play with this. It turns out that if I move this image around, right, we can follow and see what happens. I mean, the object, we can see what happens to the image. In this case, the image always stays smaller. The fun thing for you to do is to come to this. And those of you that have the mirrors can see this if you bring the concave mirror up and back. You can see some changes in what you see. All right, as I bring this in, at some point here, what we will see is that the image will no longer be real, and it will be upright. It'll flip. It'll become upright. It will become virtual. Of course, the question is, where is that going to happen? You should know that after playing with these examples, all right, and drawing diagrams. All So I would take this in, practice these diagrams, move the object, see what you get, okay? And that'll give you enough to do over the weekend.